A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 420. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Ivor the Engine. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're back with small films and their wonderful animated productions, particularly Ivor the Engine. We have got quite a lot of episodes to sort of cover, or the history of the original 6 10-minute ITV episodes in black and white from 1958. Then there was another 26 black and white episodes the following year, 1959, which we haven't been able to watch, although they do now exist in the archive, thank goodness.
And there's also a run of 40 episodes, shorter ones. These are 5-minute episodes in colour from the BBC from 1976 and 77. And it's the same basic team of people, Oliver Postgate and Peter Furman, working on all of those. And I think we'll be talking mostly about the color ones, because that's what we've been able to look at most of. And these are charming adventures about a small steam locomotive, Ivor the Engine, and a supporting cast of characters, people and animals, quite eclectic little cast, in this fictional Welsh village setting.
There's a lot of fun to be had in this setting with these characters.
Yes, indeed. So getting into some of the stuff that happens here, Ivor the Engine is a vital part of his local community.
He really is. He's providing essential services, deliveries, as you say, sometimes even just something as simple as a hat to be delivered. He's also spreading news and generally bringing sort of joy and good stuff to his local community.
He's sort of running errands for quite a bit of it. You never see him on like a regularly scheduled run. He's always sort of getting things done for people when needed.
He's a very helpful engine. As we've said, these are short 5-minute episodes, but the stories do continue over sort of story arcs in the episodes, such as, for instance, the hunt for a home for Idris the dragon. And as you said last time, Brian, it's dragons plural, because Idris is a family and the hunt for a home for them is part of the story. But also other things like their involvement in the choir and so on.
Yes, absolutely. And often you have a couple of episodes that are sort of linked up, but there are some of them where you have, you know, maybe 4 or 5 episodes linked up. We have the difficulties dealing with deep snow at this top left corner of Wales, where they end up fitting a snowplow on Ivor the Engine, and these sorts of things. And there is, I think, a bit of a light environmental message that gets into this, because there is a lot of protecting animals and sort of caring for the local countryside that comes up in the series as they go. And, you know, animals are sort of looked at as being a bit like people, and the characters tend to be very friendly with them and interact with them a lot. And they do also actually deal with the modernization of the railway network a little bit, and the idea that their branch line might be shut down or might be incorporated into something else, and maybe won't use old steam engines and this sort of thing. So that comes into it too.
Yes, and it's interesting that between 1959 and the 70s, of course, a lot of this did happen. A lot of branch lines were closed down. And this episode, or this series, sort of reflects some of that concern that communities had about losing their vital connections. And of course, in this show, with Ivor the Engine, it does lead to some community action to sort of save Ivor, this really lovely engine, and to save their branch line. And that's an interesting element as the series progresses as well.
Yes, absolutely. And that's sort of a bit of the flavor of that, is there's this sort of charming rural community that's spread out, and the engine, Ivor, is providing the links to it, and often stops, you know, right behind someone's house so people can talk to the person and things like that.
Yeah, as we said, he's a very helpful errand-running little steam locomotive.
Very much so.
Now, when there are spin-offs from the shows we cover, we like to talk about them a little bit. And here, of course, as I think was a feature with the Small Films Productions, you do get spin-offs. And obviously, over the years, it will be no surprise to hear there's been a variety of toys made of Ivor the engine himself, the little green locomotive engine. We also know about picture books, storybooks, and even paperback, sort of like semi-novelizations of Oliver Postgate's scripts. And there was at least six of those that I've been able to find. Again, you can sort of find those on the secondhand markets. They're out there.
And there were audio recordings of the episodes that were released as a set of BBC vinyl records at one point, and then also on cassette tape. And apparently there's even an Ivor the Engine board game out there somewhere, which I haven't seen, but that's sort of neat that that exists.
No. Yes. Fascinating.
And Vernon Elliott's music for bassoon and piano was made available as sheet music too, which is lovely because it's a neat little set of things, and it's not that often you get things that people will recognize that are sort of bassoon features, so that's sort of neat.
And it's not too often that we talk about a show which, if you search for it on an online shopping platform, you find the sheet music coming up as an option to buy. But it is, as you say, Brian, it is there for Ivor the Engine. Also, we've got an almost real-life Ivor the Engine, because here in the UK, a little Peckett, as it's known, steam engine has been modified to look like Ivor, and that engine turns up at a variety of heritage railway events throughout the UK. I'd be delighted to know if anybody's actually met this real-life Ivor the Engine or been pulled along by it. Please let us know.
Oh, that's fantastic. That would be great to get photos with the Ivor the Engine train.
Mm. And you may know that there's a computer programming language called Idris, and of course it is indeed apparently named after the small Welsh red, almost heraldic dragon that features in this show. Another little delightful nod from fans of the series, Brian.
Yes, it's not a terribly well-known programming language. I did look it up, but yeah, it's out there and has been used for some things.
Now, Ivor the Engine sort of came back for a while. In 2004, the BBC asked Postgate and Fermin if they would help revive Ivor the Engine for a series of television commercials, which were to advertise their new BBC Wales digital channel called 2W. And Squint Films made the adverts, with both Oliver Postgate and Anthony Jackson reprising their vocal roles. And you can watch these adverts on YouTube. I've had a look at them, and they do look like absolutely, you know, original colour Ivor the Engine moments or episodes.
Oh, lovely. Oliver Postgate's son, Dan Postgate, released a book of Ivor's adventures with art by Peter Fermin that was to raise money for animal charities in 2009, which fits with the style of Ivor the Engine that it would be for that. And there was actually talk about making some new episodes as well, but there don't seem to be any definite plans for that at this point.
Which is a shame.
Yes, for sure. Also a shame, those original 26 black and white episodes from 1959, the 10-minute episodes from 1959, which we mentioned before, have been found and they're now in archive. Those haven't been released.
Yes, I mean, tricky to know whether they'd actually find a market when the colour series exists and is easy to get hold of, but it's, like I say, it is nice to know that they have been returned to the archive. They've presumably been digitized now. Whether they'll ever turn up on a streaming platform or the BFI might do something with them, we don't know, Brian. But it's an interesting possibility.
Yes, I would love to see those turn up on BritBox along with the 70s version. And I don't know how much restoration they would need, and this may be part of the issue, would be a release that would be able to cover the costs of the restoration involved.
Yeah. Tricky one.
Yes.
So it's time for us to get into our own thoughts and views about Ivor the Engine, and in particular those colour episodes that we've been watching from the 70s. Brian, how would you like to start us off with the good things that you liked about this show?
Yeah, so it's quite a charming, you know, animated children's show. I will start by saying, while the look of it is quite, you know, basic, you could even say primitive as animation styles go, those watercolor backgrounds and watercolor characters that Peter Furman did, some of them look just beautiful. You know, there's some lovely watercolor paintings to look at there.
Yes, Peter Furman's work in the backdrops, the paintings, the characters, it's all this, as you say, sort of quaint, almost primitive 2D animation, stop motion animation style, but it looks so beautiful. Peter Furman's work is so beautiful. The characters of the characters and Ivor and Idris the dragon come across in the way that they are painted and designed. Yeah, so it looks absolutely beautiful, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of charm and character to the visuals of it.
Then we've got Oliver Postgate's writing and stories. A wonderful storyteller, particularly when he starts to, you know, do the narration and the voices. The stories themselves are, you know, charming fun. They're quite short in the colour ones, but they do run into longer sequences of developing stories. What did you make about all the various little adventures of Ivor and his supporting cast?
Yeah, for the most part, I quite liked them. You know, it's definitely children's television fare, but in the 1970s version, it is done pretty well and does some nice stuff. I don't feel that it's talking down to the kids too much. I feel it's more coming and having fun with these characters, with the kids. I think there is a big improvement in that sense compared to the 1958 black and white version. Those ones did feel a bit more like they were talking down to the kids and they're quite slow in their pacing. With the color 5-minute episodes and the style of narration they do for those, I thought it, on the whole, worked quite well.
Yes, the original 6 black and white episodes, which we have been able to watch, do take 6 episodes to find out how Ivor gets his whistles. The other thing, of course, we've got to talk about the vocal performances. And you'd noted, I know, Brian, that there is a development from Oliver Postgate's original narration to the 1970s version.
Yeah, definitely. So in 58, he was doing all of the voices, and that was a little awkward, and I think he was not as good at the narration in general then, when he was doing characters with Welsh voices. I thought the Welsh accents in that early one were not as good. And he also did the whole narration in a Welsh accent, which may have been a mistake. With the 70s version, he was not doing a Welsh accent for the narration, although he did for the voice of Edwin Jones. But I think it was a better one. I think his pronunciation of the name of the town, which I will attempt, it was Llanioch, and that improved in his 1970s version. So I thought the way he was doing things improved a lot for the 70s version. And of course, having 3 different voice actors made a very big difference as well.
Yes, it's great when we get Anthony Jackson and Alwyn Griffiths on board to sort of fill out the cast. I've said this many a time on this show, Brian, but Oliver Postgate's voice, one of the voices of my childhood. So I love to hear him again telling these simple little stories. And yeah, I think in the 1976 version, he's doing great work. He's become the master of his craft by then in terms of narrating and telling stories. wonderful work.
Yeah, it feels like the Oliver Postgate we know as a narrator from Bagpuss and from Clangers. But that early one, that's, you know, 10 years before anything else we've talked about. And yeah, he wasn't quite there yet at that point.
Okay. Now, obviously, Small Films productions have music from Vernon Elliott and some other sources in this case. You're our expert on this, Brian. What did you make of the musical contributions to this show?
Oh, I quite enjoyed it. I thought they were well handled. I like the idea of using the bassoon for the voice, if you will, of Ivor, and also for the theme music. I thought that was well done. We hear the local choir singing under the direction of our character Evan Evans, and that worked pretty well. I believe they must have been using sort of stock recordings of a choir, quite possibly a Welsh choir. It did have the right sort of sound for that. We did have the thing that what we were hearing was a much bigger choir than what we saw. So, you know, we would see a group of a dozen people singing and hear what sounds like, you know, 100 voices in a choir or something like that. So I did notice that. But all in all, I think the choir worked well. I think having Ivor playing along with the choir worked well. They did it in the style of maybe an organ accompaniment. So it was neat to see when I looked at that, I went back and looked at the 1958 version after seeing the 70s one. And in the story there, they were in fact steam organ pipes that were being fitted to Ivor to give Ivor that voice. So that was sort of neat. They do go out of our way to say that Ivor has exactly 3 notes that he can sound and no more. And when we hear Ivor playing with the choir, we hear a lot more than 3 notes. We hear a full set of notes, if you will. So those are sort of some thoughts there. But all in all, I thought the music in this and the use of the choral music in this, I thought it worked well. I was always pleased to hear it.
I thought I loved it. I loved the bassoon whistle. I loved the theme tune. And I also loved hearing those little snippets of a Welsh, as you say, quite large voice choir. I don't know where they got those from. It'd be fascinating to know which choir that was, because it does sound beautiful, although very brief in the episodes. So yeah, the music was great.
It wouldn't surprise me if it was a stack of old records they had there that were done in such a way that they didn't have to pay royalties on them.
Sure. The episodes are short. They are sweet, I think we can say. It does present a sort of elegiac, nostalgic look at a part of Wales and Welsh culture that, even if we, you know, put dragons and personality engines to one side, probably never really existed to this extent. But it, you know, there's a certain charm to it, although it does bring us into potential problems with the depiction, Brian.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some stereotypes going on there in this depiction of life in Wales that was written by someone from England. And the voices, we have 3 voice actors in our 1970s version, with 2 of them being from England, and I believe 1 is from Wales. I don't think the accents were too bad. To my ear, which, you know, I'm from a long way from there, but I think they were trying to do accurate versions and did reasonably well, as opposed to doing sort of, you know, parody versions. But yeah, it definitely was sort of an English take on this old version of Wales. So that is potentially an issue that you could see as charming, but may have some issues there and could be problematic as well.
Yes, I think we just have to note it that, you know, it does have this very sort of typical Welshness approach to the stories and the setting, which may be, with hindsight now, rather something that never really existed and is a bit sort of stereotypical. I've also got to mention that there's the Alice the Elephant's Indian elephant keeper, Barney, who is, again, perhaps a slightly, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, a slightly unfortunate stereotype as well.
Yeah, that one definitely was a little cringeworthy with the East Indian accent definitely being more of a comedy version, I guess, and there being lots of stereotypes in how he was portrayed. I don't think it was a particularly negative portrayal. I think he was meant to be sort of a good person and, you know, dealing with caring for animals, which is sort of seen as an important thing and a big virtue in this series. But yeah, it was a lot of stereotype with that character. And that is, you know, the for me, the biggest drawback of the 1970s version is that portrayal and that character.
Okay. Now, we've included it in our roster because we are sort of working our way through the small films productions. Its genre credentials for our sort of fantasy and science fiction theme, I suppose it just rests on a couple of features in this show, Brian.
Yeah, well, you have the dragons. We end up with a family of four dragons, and they are recurring characters and one of the better parts of this show. I really enjoyed the dragons. And they're from this sort of Welsh heraldry tradition, and the look of them, they're small dragons flying around. And yeah, they were definitely a big piece of that sort of speculative fiction part. But not the only piece, because Ivar has a very big personality and people interact with him like a person. And he is like a person in a lot of ways, and how he communicates through whistles, but acts like a person in many ways. And some of the animals, you know, Bluebell the donkey acts more like a person than a donkey in many ways.
Good. So it does fit into our remit. And how delightful to be able to include it. Would it entertain a modern children audience, do you think, the short colour episodes?
That's a good question. I think it might. I'd love to hear if anyone has shown the 1970s episodes in particular to younger folks. I would say you probably want to screen the episodes first, because when it comes to Bonnie, that East Indian character, you want to know what that's like ahead of time and decide if you want to include those episodes and how you want to talk about them if you do. And there may be other things that you decide you would want to talk about or want to not include, possibly. So I would say this is something definitely to screen before showing them to kids. But yeah, it would be really interesting to hear what modern kids would think about it. And maybe they would enjoy a lot of it. I'm not sure.
Do let us know if you have your own thoughts or views about showing Ivar the Engine to a young audience nowadays. Or if you've done so, please let us know.
Yes, for sure.
So it's time to recommend or not the Ivar the Engine collection to our listeners. Brian, do you want to kick us off? How will you feel about this show?
Sure. I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was charming. I enjoyed the characters and the voices. I thought the visuals, some of them were quite pretty, even though it was this very basic, simple form of animation. I thought it was lovely and quite enjoyed the 1970s version. So for the 70s version, I will definitely recommend it. The 1958 version, I would not recommend in the same way. It really isn't as good, but for curiosity, seeing it's available for free, you may want to check it out. But really, it's the 1970s one, I would say, yes, recommended.
Great stuff. And I will put a link to the 1958 black and white versions on the Facebook page when this comes out. For me, it's going to be love, 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 Ivar the Engine. I highly recommend this. This is wonderful. They're short, they're delightful, they're charming, they're extremely easy to watch over here in the UK, either on DVD or rental or streaming, as I've been doing, or on that wonderful DVD box set, which includes Clangers and Bagpuss and Ivar the Engine. I think I'm probably still thinking that Clangers is the best of those three so far, but it's fairly close. And Ivar the Engine is just a delight and just such a part of my childhood. So yeah, I'm going to recommend it as well to our listeners, Brian. Sort of double thumbs up for us here on British Invaders.
Okay, that sounds great. So, in summary, Ivar the Engine introduced us to the quaint Welsh village of Llanioch, and this steam engine, Ivor, who seems to have a personality all of his own, that the other characters can talk to him and he responds with whistles, and we have this sort of relationships developing with this character as Ivor goes up and down the rail line, this regional rail line, doing deliveries and general errands for people. And we are also introduced to lovely characters like Edwin Jones and the choir master, Evan Evans. We have Dye Station, the station master, who all sort of know each other and interact with each other and are involved with helping to solve various little problems that come up, riding around in Ivor and so on. We also even get donkeys and elephants and this wonderful family of dragons. So lots of charming stuff going on in this one.
It's delightful. Do let us know what you think about it.
Absolutely.
And of course, please come back next time. We're probably on more traditional science fiction ground, I think, with a BBC show called Intruders from 2014. And I'll just say, you'll probably want to listen to us talk at least about the cast, because it's very interesting cast members coming up next time. I haven't got into that show yet, but I know you've started it already, Brian.
Yes, definitely some interesting things and some nice performances there. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there. And you can follow us on Twitter. We are at Brit Invaders Pod. So, yeah, please join in on the conversations on the socials.
Please do. Also, please come along and join in the conversation at the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find, as ever, at vognetwork.com. You'll find Twitch streaming, gaming content and podcasts, including British Invaders, as part of the Voice of Geeks Network.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. Until next time, this is Clark, the podcast, signing off.